Good morning and greetings in Jesus, who said, "Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me." Come and learn, Jesus says. And then before he ascended to heaven, he said, "Go and teach all nations, teaching them." So as followers of Jesus, we come and learn of him as our master and our master teacher, the model teacher, and then we're delegated to go and teach. Well, I'm in the midst of some very important people, at least according to Jewish culture. The teacher in Jewish culture was held in higher esteem than the king. Like Mr. Trump, I guess we might say, or Mr. Trudeau. If the king and a teacher were captured by the enemy, the teacher needed to be rescued first, ahead of the king. Now, more important to me than Jewish culture are the words of in Daniel chapter 12 and verse 3, which in the Amplified puts it this way, "And the teachers and those who are wise shall shine like the brightness of the firmament, and those who turn many to righteousness, to uprightness and right standing with God, shall shine forth like the stars forever and ever." So I like that interpretation, that standing, the words of Daniel 12:3, "And the teachers shall shine like the stars." Well, I'd like to thank this group for your friendliness and hospitality and good food and prayers, and I've been quite impressed by the atmosphere here. What's been served by the cooks and what's been served by presenters. I've been impressed by the number of men that are present, and the singing, and just the culture of this institute. I'd like to share, first of all, a variety of thoughts, a bit of a mishmash, and then focus especially on relationships, the school culture pertaining to relationships. Where there is a culture of appreciation for Christian education, students may be more open to teaching, and so that's an ongoing cultural aspect. For quite a number of years, I don't know if it's quite that way the last several years, but probably pretty close. But I noticed that over the years, about one in every five of my students became teachers, not so much at the school where I teach, but at other schools. Possibly it was because they saw my enjoyment of teaching. More likely, they thought, "Surely I can do a better job than that." Appreciation for students and for their work. This picture here behind me shows a group of four students who accompanied me to Washington, D.C. in recognition of the work that they had done in learning over 1,000 verses of memory work. Reminds us of the culture of the work ethic and motivation and parental support, listening to the memory work and transporting sometimes students to various places. Reminds me that a culture can expand learning. At my present school, there's the expectation that teachers will be outside with the students at recess and playing with them. And so I enjoy softball and football and volleyball, and hockey is my favorite. And so we occasionally have a recess problem, but that's quite rare. the expectation of playing together as well as working together. In fact, a culture of appreciation produces more appreciation, more things to appreciate, and affirmation has to sometimes be taught, as I mentioned one other day about the teacher of younger grades who taught the students to say, "You can do it, good try," and then that feeds, and then they actually try harder, and they affirm each other more, and they feel better. If you're looking for some ways to increase appreciation, you might do some variation of what my wife and I did with our children as they realized years ago that although I said regularly thanks for the meal to my wife, the children didn't. And so we came up with a scheme, and it was called the Yuck Box Scheme. And the way it worked, every time they said thank you, they got a penny to put into a container. And every time they complained about something or failed to say thank you, then they had to take 10 pennies out. And that was yucky. So that was the Yuck Box. And so we heard thank you for passing the potatoes. And then they'd say thank you for saying thank you for passing the potatoes. And we sort of had to limit this to a couple of thank yous per incident. But anyway, we got about $100 that summer, and we went to Toronto with our family. And anyway, you can try different things like that to focus attention on things that you'd like to improve and change the culture, and then use it. If there's a culture of enjoying good singing, then that tends to produce more good singing. So that's using the culture. A culture of reading and appreciation for literature. Yesterday, in my workshop about communicating an Anabaptist worldview, I was mentioning concerning a project that I had initiated with my class last year. I teach a high school class about Mennonite history. And so I made up a list of close to 100 books on the subject, a lot of them storybooks, historical fiction sort of thing, that they could read. And if they, I think it was a little over 60 books if they read last year, they got a special reward, a trip to Detroit, actually. Anyway, I said I would make that list of books available in room 2, and I failed to do that. And I don't know where my copy is. I think somebody took it, which was fine. But anyway, I have a paper here that if any of you want that list of books, as some of you indicated you would, or anyone else, you can sign up on this paper. If you already signed for an outline of the history course that I developed, you don't have to sign again. Also, something that I forgot to say about from that class, I painted a rather bleak picture of communicating the way our schools and churches and Mennonite communities, rather bleak picture of how many people of our children continue to be conservative Mennonites. And it was, as the figures that I was giving, was more like 50% and so on. It doesn't need to be that way, and I think many times in our communities it isn't that way, but it is a threat, and it is something we need to be aware of. We're not trying to reproduce a culture and continue a culture as such, except as it is a biblical culture. And I'd read some of these statistics a few years ago, maybe 5 years or so ago, and I look back over the records of the students that I've had at school, and it was over 100 someplace, a couple hundred, I guess, as to how many continued to be conservative Mennonites, or those who would practice the seven ordinances. And it could have been better, but at least it was about 90% that were continuing on in the faith. And that's quite a bit the the work of the parents and the church, but I like to think of that maybe I contributed a bit to that as well. School culture and using it. It can be the basis of appeal to the student who is not performing properly. We can say, we don't do things like that here, or we don't talk that way. To the parent who is objecting to something, we can say, is there a good reason to change how we have been doing it? At the same time, it's good to have variety within a structure, some variety in schedule, in routine, in expectation, in method, in content, and in posture. So, please stand up now. And let's review the final time that little song that I taught you to make sure you've got it. God is a good God. God is a good God, oh yes He is. God is a good God, oh yes He is. God is a good God, oh yes He is. God is a good God, oh yes He is. He will lift you up, He will turn you around, He will set your feet on solid ground. He will lift you up, He will turn you around, He will set your feet on solid ground. God is a good God, oh yes He is. God is a good God, oh yes He is. God is a good God, oh yes He is. God is a good God, oh yes He is. Thank you. So it's a basis of appeal, culture, a way of doing things. Having said there is place for variety, yet school culture provides precedents and traditions that give stability and direction. There's no need to reinvent the wheel. And school culture can prevent problems and conflicts. And I am a believer in prevention. Prevention is far superior to finding a solution, especially in relationship problems. And so I'm going to talk about relationships primarily now. Having a culture of communication with parents can go a long ways in preventing problems. A phone call, a little talk when a parent comes to pick up their children to take them home, a text or a paper sent home. So the grade 1 and 2 teacher at our school, namely my daughter Esther, has a way of communicating with the parents in her class. I'm not sure, can you turn off the lights here for a few moments? So this is a weekly newsletter that gets sent home. And so you can see here a bit of information from the health unit about what's going to be happening. A quick note about studying spelling and remembering there's no school on. I think that would have been for CMTI. And a few other items. And usually some pictures of what's been happening in the school. This one comes from January. And so there's some pictures of skating and a special meal and just normal activities. And I guess this was after singing at the Christmas program, and the children looked quite happy about things. Here now is April. We have kindergarten joined, so this was the total group in grades 1 and 2 plus kindergarten. And so there's pictures. And she's fairly careful to have not the same people pictured. And so these get home. Sent home on a weekly basis, or just about weekly basis. Thank you. Lights can go back on again. I'd like to think about the relationship of the principal to the teachers. And if you have your Bibles, you could turn to 1 Peter 3. And this, the context here is husbands and wives. And I realize there's a significant difference between husbands and wives and principals and teachers. But here's a paraphrase in which I tried to make some applications of a principle relating to the teachers and vice versa. From verse 5, "After this manner, the holy teachers who trusted in God adorned themselves with a meek spirit, being cooperative with their own principles. Likewise, ye principals, dwell with your teaching staff according to knowledge and consideration, listening attentively to a teacher's concerns, giving words of commendation, and delivering criticism graciously. Give them honor and respect as partners with you in communicating truth, teaching subjects, developing good work habits, maintaining order, cultivating character, and exemplifying the truth, that your prayers and your work for the pupils be not hindered. Finally, be all of one mind in matters of playground rules and consistency of discipline and the sharing of sports equipment and playground areas and deciding who leads the singing in joint devotional times. Have compassion one of another, having sympathy for the other teacher who has a whining third grader or an incontinent first grader or a disrespectful seventh grader. Love as brothers and sisters, giving ideas for bulletin boards, doing extra outdoor supervision when a colleague has a migraine, sharing a lunch when a teacher forgets his. Be pitiful and compassionate when your co-teacher has a bad day, when he faces parental displeasure, when she has to reteach the past 2 days of math to Tommy. Be courteous, not asking personal or prying questions, not eavesdropping in conversations with other adults, not invading personal space, but saying, thanks, excuse me, please, I'm sorry, and what do you think? Not rendering evil for evil or insult for insult, scolding, tongue-lashing, or berating each other, but contrariwise, bless each other. As co-laborers and fellow Christians, you should encourage, pray for, and be protective of each other. As you bless others, you will inherit a blessing. For he that will love a life of teaching and see good days at school, let him refrain his tongue from evil and his lips that they speak no guile or pretense. Communicate openly, lovingly, and clearly with each other. Let each teacher eschew and turn from wrongdoing, and let each do good for the other. Let each one seek peace and pursue harmonious relations. Therefore, keep free from gossip, false assumptions, the judging of motives, and hurtful remarks. For the eyes of the Lord are over the righteous teacher, and his ears are open to their prayers. But the face of the Lord is against them that do evil. And who is he, parent, board member, or fellow teacher, who will harm you and your reputation if you be followers and teachers of that which is good?" Next, let's think about the principle relating to the board. First of all, with openness. I've worked with probably 30 different board members, maybe more than that, at my present school. And I find it's very helpful to be able to talk openly about things. Consulting with the board before making decisions, being frank and honest about problems and plans, because only by openness and integrity can trust be built. And trust is a basic element in a good relationship. Relate to the school board with accuracy. So when you're speaking for the teaching staff, reflect their thinking accurately. And don't exaggerate a problem or omit pertinent information. With carefulness, be sure you have board approval, unless there's a policy or precedent in place. Use clarity. Help the school board to see the total school picture. Be positive about things, not just negative. Approach the board with evenness. And that refers to the whole board, not just to one board member, as a general rule. Of course, you can talk to the chairman representing the board at any time, but don't try to cozy up to one particular board member. And approach the board with respect for their authority. If there are areas where you don't agree, submit cheerfully. So this applies to the lead teacher, the principal, or even others. And I have found as a principal relating to the school board, that it's been a joyful and enriching and a rewarding experience. Let's think about the school board relating to each other. A number of years ago, I was asked by a person who was never on the school board before. I forget now if he was just joining the school board or if he was becoming the chairman. I think he was just joining the school board. So I made up 10 suggestions for him and gave them to him since he was asking. And I'll just read them. Number one, try to understand a situation before giving a solution. You know, some of us are pretty good at giving the answer before we know what the question is. Secondly, in a controversy, listen to both sides before coming to a conclusion. Proverbs 18:13 says, "He who answers a matter before he hears the facts is as folly and shame to him." That would be from the Amplified. Third, make yourself available to the teachers. Do so first by dropping in after school and just asking how things are going. And second best, give an occasional phone call. This especially pertains to the board chairman, but when a chairman's schedule is prohibitive, another member can ask. Fourth, consult with the principal before major decisions pertaining to the school, for example, change of policy or hiring of teachers. Now, this would apply to our particular school, where I, as principal, am usually asked about a potential teacher. Doesn't need to be that way. But I'm saying this is to get his point of view. This is not because he calls the shots or because his perspective may be, but because his perspective may be valuable. Fifth, if you are the chairman, don't you act unilaterally, but work as a team. This doesn't mean that a chairman can't give an answer to a teacher without checking with all the school board members, but the decision needs to correspond with school policy or precedent. Six, make repairs reasonably quickly. Seventh, give words of commendation, especially to the new teacher who may feel insecure. Eight, visit classrooms periodically. Then if there is an invalid complaint from parents, you can say, "This isn't how I found it." Ninth, be businesslike in a board meeting, but also enjoy some humor. And tenth, be balanced, especially as it relates to both teachers and parents. You need to be fair, considerate, and open to both sides. So that's my beef for the board. Anyway, advice to them. Teachers relating to each other. Now, I'm going to read from Romans 12, and there would be various other passages that you could turn to in terms of relationships with co-teachers. But I like these verses from Romans 12, beginning to read at verse 9. Let love be without dissimulation, in other words, without hypocrisy. Abhor that which is evil, cleave to that which is good. Makes sense. Tenth verse, be kindly affectioned one to another with brotherly love. So be kind, thoughtful, and considerate. In honor, preferring one another. So there's lots of applications there in things that have to be done around the school in honor. Well, here's a job. Yeah, I prefer that you do it. Well, that isn't quite what I meant. 11th, not slothful in business. Don't be lazy. Do your share. Fervent in spirit. Be positive and enthusiastic. Serving the Lord, having a servant mentality. Verse 12, rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, continuing instant in prayer, being patient, praying for one another, applying Bible principles. Now we have some parents here too, so I'd like to give 10 commandments for parents in relating to the teachers, and then we'll do the reverse. Number one. Thou shalt not seek for man's approval, but God's approval in the education of thy child. This is for parents, Christian school parents. Two, thou shalt cooperate with the school board, not neglecting attendance at parent-teacher meetings. Three, thou shalt not send thy child to a Christian school in vain, by negating its influence and continually criticizing the school, regularly provoking thy child to wrath at home, and just plain being a hypocrite. Fourth, Remember the Lord's command for parents themselves personally to teach God's law diligently. And thou shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou drivest down the highway, and when thou risest up to do work together. Fifth, honor thy teacher with commendations, visits to school, acts of thoughtfulness, supportive words, and a reluctance to believe a child's negative report without questioning and investigating whether his perception of events is accurate. Sixth, thou shalt not kill. Respect for thy child's teacher, but thou shalt speak positively and favorably of thy child's teacher in the hearing of thy child, and reserve negative criticism for other times as necessary. Seven, thou shalt pray audibly for thy child's teacher, and encourage thy child to pray also for his teacher. Eight, thou shalt not steal by refraining from paying thy rightful and expected share of school costs. Ninth, thou shalt not bear false witness against thy child's teacher, the administrator, school board, nor classmates by passing on gossip about them. 10. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's child's abilities, nor put thy child under pressure. I said something wrong there. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's child's abilities, nor put thy child under pressure by making comparisons with other students, nor desire honor for thy child, nor thyself. Now then, teachers relating to parents. The bulk of you are teachers here, so I'll take a few whacks at this topic. One, pray. Pray for the parents of your pupils in the hearing of your pupils. I think that's a good idea. So pray for the parents. Two, comment appreciatively about the parents, their interests, their cooperation in the classroom. Talk with gratitude about the parents and their involvement. Thirdly, communicate directly with the parent. I'm saying this as opposed to using the child normally as an intermediary. So in any sensitive matter, you know, if it's not a critical matter, you can go through the parent, the child. But in any sensitive matter, or one in which misunderstandings could occur, communicate directly with the parent rather than using the child as a go-between. Fourth, speak courteously to parents. So treat them with respect. Speak courteously to them. Fifth, I don't know how to say this briefly. Talk to the parents before the child gets home with a negative report, is basically what I'm going to say here. But you can anticipate occasions when a pupil may deliberately, or not deliberately, but often deliberately, give a biased, selective version of events. So I like to talk to the parents before the child gets home, or send an explanatory note home before the pupil gives his colored report to his parents. And where corporal punishment is necessary, I always want to communicate directly and promptly to the parents about the use of the rod on a student. In fact, I like to have their permission and their support before that takes place. Sixth, be worthy of parents' trust. They've given you a responsibility. They've placed their trust for their most precious relationships. Be worthy of the trust parents placed in you as teacher of their children. Seventh, protect parental reputation as much as you can. You might get wind of some uncomplimentary evaluations of parents among students, and you need to squelch that. Protect the reputation of the parents. Eighth, be patient when students are late. Talked a little about this yesterday in some discussions. Be patient rather than exasperated when parents bring pupils to school late or are slow to return them to their homes. Ninth, be friendly to parents in a non-school setting, like you would hope a pupil would be to you in that setting. So be friendly and respectful to parents in non-school settings, like at church. Tenth, treat parents equally. Avoid subtle unfavorable comparisons. So treat them fairly, equally. 11th, follow the golden rule. If you are the parent, of course, but if you teachers are parents as well. And the 12th point is to keep confidences. You know, just as medical people have boundaries, have parameters for what they tell outside of their work, we as teachers do too. And teachers are privy to information that parents and students trust and expect us to keep confidential. It might be academic information, might be funny stories that the students tell, might be behavioral issues. We might be frustrated with a situation. So, particularly where it's a church community, it's very easy to let things slip out of our tongue, from our mouth, that ought to be kept confidential. So, you can talk among yourselves as teachers, you can talk with the board, you can talk with the principal. But be very careful about what is written in emails or form letters or passed on. Some teachers might be involved in social networking sites. Be very, very careful. So, keep things confidential. School culture can avoid or reduce discipline problems. So, I have a number of points here that I'd like to make. Pray for yourself, pray for the students, pray for discernment. I like to avoid discipline problems as much as possible. You can also prepare. If you're prepared, you're going to communicate a feeling of, you know where you're going, a feeling of confidence, and then as students absorb that feeling, they feel more secure and they're more likely to behave and cooperate. Minimize distractions. This has to do with unnecessary movements in the classroom, routines and so on. Try to get rid of flickering lights or a cool draft or a ill-fitting desk, things like that. You know, Jesus, when he taught them on the Sermon on the Mount, when he was set, he opened his mouth. So there may have been some distractions there too, but he sat down and he taught them. Sitting, of course, was good Oriental teaching position. Today we usually stand rather than sit, I suppose, to teach. Insist on adherence to rules. In other words, nip misconduct in the bud. Don't let minor misbehavior develop into something serious. This is all about using the culture of class control. Give clear instructions. Much disorder is caused when students are not sure what in the world they're supposed to be doing. So be explicit, be very clear, crystal clear in your directions right off the bat. Generally wait for students' undivided attention before you explain what they're supposed to be doing. Maintain eye contact as much as possible, rather than if a teacher is sitting at the desk and marking things and who knows what's happening out there in the classroom. So, and apart from that, observe them. It's a bit of a knack, I suppose. It comes with some experience to be able to think of where you're going and look at the children at their desk at the same time. Remember the value of proximity. So here we have a student that's not behaving too well. So I don't have to draw any particular attention to him verbally. All I have to do is get rather close to him and keep on talking and see if he feels a little embarrassed and uncomfortable and he's going to change his ways, I suppose. Even with them, of course, this is an altogether different setting than a classroom, but yeah, it can make you feel, what am I doing wrong? Well, he didn't know what he was doing wrong, but the student does. He was doing just fine. Keep students busy. Idle bodies are busy bodies, as a general rule. So, interesting extra activities. Add books to the library. That's one of my projects. Submitting books for approval to the library committee. Some educational puzzles, variety of things that can be done to keep students busy. Have variety, variety of content, variety of procedure within the framework of routine. And be an example of self-discipline yourself. So this has to do with how we appear, how we walk, what our desk looks like, avoiding an attitude of laziness or carelessness, not losing patience and that sort of thing. Trying to wrap this up here with a few final things. Have here an application of Proverbs 31. As you can tell, I like to sometimes take the scriptures and try to make application, show the relevance of the scripture to my own life, or in this case, to the life of a classroom teacher. So this is a paraphrase of Proverbs 31 about a virtuous teacher for you to think about, and having a culture of virtue in the classroom. Who can find a virtuous teacher, for her price is far above a decent salary? The heart of her school board doth safely trust in her, so that they shall have no fear of shame coming upon the school. She will do the school good and not evil all the days of the school year. She seeketh bulletin board ideas and new teaching aids. She recommends library books and worketh willingly with her hands. She is like the merchant ships. She comes to WFTI. She bringeth her appetizers, the points of contact from afar, from her travels, from books and magazines, from sermons, from conversations with neighbors, from missionary accounts, and from personal research. She riseth also while it is yet dark to write down good ideas that come to her during the night, and makes early preparation to present lessons in her classroom and a portion to her pupils. She considereth a book of devotional ideas and buyeth it with the fruit of her hands. She planteth noble ideas. She girdeth her loins by preparing for her classes using the daily plan book, and strengtheneth her discipline with the confidence that comes from being prepared. She perceiveth that her knowledge is good. She keeps the zeal of students burning through the dark places of school life. She layeth her hand to the piece of chalk, and her hands hold the pointer. She stretcheth out her hand to the needy pupil, yea, she reacheth forth her hands to the slow learner. She is not afraid of what the next term will bring, for all her pupils are clothed with humility and trust. She is able to rest at the end of the day, knowing that she's done her best for the Lord. Her school board is encouraged by her efforts when its members sit together to review school life and to plan for the future. She maketh fine lessons and persuades her students of truth. She provides belts or girdles of integrity. Strength and honor are her clothing, and she shall rejoice in the effective service of her former pupils, whom she helped prepare. She openeth her mouth with wisdom, in stimulating worship during morning devotions, in selecting words of rebuke for the unruly pupil, in giving judicious praise, in clarifying a math problem, in manifesting God's hand in science and history and health, and in encouraging spiritual growth. In her tongue is the law of kindness to the timid, the loner, the slow learner, the smart aleck, and the pupil with low self-esteem. She looketh well to the ways of her classroom, preventing discipline problems by love, by prayers, by good rapport with pupils. She correcteth discipline problems by rebuke, by withdrawal of privileges, and by the proper use of corporal punishment. She eateth not the bread of idleness, planning and grading and interceding and explaining. Her students arise up and call her blessed, the parents also, and they praise her. Many daughters have done much good, but a teacher has the potential to influence lives greatly for time and eternity. Favor is deceitful, and beauty is vain, but a teacher that feareth the Lord, she shall be praised. Give her a good salary, appropriate respect and plentiful support, and let her own graduates praise her in the future. That's a challenge to us as teachers. I hope I have been of some help to you here in the West. An encouragement. A favorite verse of mine as a teacher, as a communicator in various ways, comes from Matthew 13:52. So I'm going to close with that verse. This is after all the stories that Jesus has told, new stories and as well as some old concepts. Matthew 13:52 says, "Then said he unto them, Therefore every scribe which is instructed unto the kingdom of heaven is like unto a man that is an householder, which bringeth forth out of his treasure things new and old." Now the Amplified Bible puts it this way. Every teacher, that's the scribe, every teacher and interpreter of the sacred writings who has been instructed about and trained for the kingdom of heaven and has become a disciple is like a householder who brings forth out of his treasure house, out of his storehouse, treasure that is new and treasure that is old, the fresh as well as the familiar. It's that phrase there that catches my attention and is an attempt of mine as a teacher. There are many things that are old. We have the old ways, we have the old teachings, the reliable, the authentic, the authoritative Word of God. But there are fresh ways of presenting it. And there are the old facts about math and science and history. But there can be some new things, some fresh things. So try to incorporate the fresh as well as the familiar in your teaching. Jesus said, "Come and learn." Then with authority and power he said, "Go and teach." The task before us is never greater than the power behind us.